David A. Price presents...
Hello, folks. Springtime Steve Raker here, peeping at you from the Comic Book Bunker. Welcome to Marvel Noise, episode 364. Marvel Noise is the podcast proudly sponsored by nobody. You can download and stream episodes new and old at marvelnoise.com and be alerted to new episodes, cover galleries, and more on our Twitter and Facebook pages. This episode, Andrew the LA Rabbit and WWX Kevin will join me to present some Amazing Spider-Man issues from the 70s, and then after a related special treat, we'll reconvene and talk up some recent reads. Although, not all recent books, that's for sure. With no time to waste, let's make haste!
Oh boy, hold on to your seats. This is going to be a good one.
That was that indie. You heard that one, Steve, right? Where I did you?
No.
Where
was that was a recent?
Like, coming to you live from my bunker. When I was in the Adirondacks, I used to read Captain Canuck. I had told it.
Yeah, I left it. I left the beginning of it as Kevin.
Is that a recent one? Why didn't?
Yeah,
why?
I don't remember. Okay.
Yeah, it's pretty recent. Right. I don't know how. It should only be a few back. Yeah.
I like bits.
Yeah, I've noticed. Alright, time for a Bronze Age binge, all the way back to the summer of 1973 with Amazing Spider-Man issues 123, 124 and 125. Woohoo!
The Green Goblin's dead.
It's a really important and heavy time in Spider-Man's world, right, guys? I mean, this is... Right? I mean, like, the issue after the Green Goblin and Gwen both died.
Super angsty Peter, too. It's not like an issue goes by and everything's cool again.
Yeah, that's Jerry Conway for you, right?
Love that.
These issues are written by Jerry Conway, and issue 123 and 124 have a art team consisting of Gil Kane on breakdowns, and then John Romita doing the finished pencil art and inking all of the figures, and Tony Mortolaro doing the background inks. But
Steve,
it works.
When you told me about these issues, they were so special, I went and busted out the CD-ROMs.
Oh, nice.
I've mentioned this before. In the early 2000s, Marvel foolishly licensed out their content to be scanned into PDFs, and the first set was Spider-Man. In fact, it was on CD-ROMs. The other ones were on single discs, Fantastic Four and other series. And I gobbled these up because they're the actual... They took the issue and scanned them in.
Yeah.
So you really get the ads and all the fun stuff. I've gotten used to these are also on the Unlimited. I've gotten used to the Unlimited coloring, but I kind of miss all the ads and all that funky stuff.
Yeah.
So I did a little comparison on some of it, but I was like, you know what? These issues deserve that PDF. Because I will say, I feel like the covers, they really do a nice job on the Unlimited. They really bring those to life. But there's something about the old coloring and then getting all those weird ads in the middle for... This is the era of, like, get a job. Like, correspondence schools for locksmithing and all kinds of weird trades and everything. It was just such a weird time. And as a kid, it's so funny. I remember the ads, but I never was into them. Like, they were not... I was not going to send my 50 cents... for your nuclear submarine that you'll send me or whatever. Like, all my money was dedicated to buying new comics, not hustles in the back of these. Although in hindsight, kind of wish I'd bought that nuclear sub for 50 cents, Steve.
I do recall, I mean, I wasn't a send-in for the things, too, because let's face it, 6 to 8 weeks is way too long to wait for anything to be processed. And you did become familiar with the ads, right? Like, there's that ad again. There's that, you know, especially if it was a situation where, like, all the back covers that month or a few months in a row would all be the same ad. Yeah. Look who's smiling now. You know, it's this guy who got his degree online or something. But you got used to seeing those ads. And it's funny how now when I see them, there's a hint of, you know, happy nostalgia when I see some of these old things, even though I didn't read them then and I don't really stop to read all the details now.
I look them up now because I'm curious, like the one for the military strategy magazine. Like, I'm curious what happened to those. And with the internet, you can research it. Yeah. But it's just weird that I would have... Well, also, as a kid, I wasn't interested in correspondence school. But probably my favorite is every one of these has ads for gaining weight and losing weight. Mm. I always want a story of a kid that's, like, too skinny, so he gains too much weight, and then has to send in for the one to lose weight and build muscle. Hey, and all this.
They know their comic audience. Kids that are too skinny, kids that are too heavy. The kids that are just right, they're buying baseball cards.
And get out of here with your stamp collecting ads. Hey, I didn't know anyone that collected stamps. Us comic readers did not truck with the stamp collectors and the pneumaticists and those other collecting people.
That's
get them
us.
Out of here.
I think that's us now, while everyone else is like consuming all of our characters in, you know, animated and movies and TV and stuff like that. We're like hanging on to these comics like the old stamp collectors hung onto their stamps. I had one of those CD-ROMs, I still do, of all of the Mad magazines.
Yes, I remember when that one came. There's also, there were a few other side, not just comic ones. But yeah, I think some of the Star Trek ones ended up too, Kevin. I know you're a Star Trek guy.
Yeah, I never saw those. I know there were some Archie ones, too.
So Amazing Spider-Man 123 has a great Romita cover where you're looking over the edge of a building as Luke Cage is punching Spidey. It's just a great composition and fantastic cover.
Yeah, I'm reading these in Masterworks form.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah, I love the improbable body positioning, too. That means for a giant, like... There is no, you can't construct where the half a second before picture, because he's straddling, like, unless they were a lot closer than you would normally be to punch someone. It's a fun composition, but the angle makes it, because everybody, it's New York, so everybody's looking from their window and kind of angry at them.
I was going to say that, look how many people are just waving out and just hanging out going, what is happening?
You know what? When you got somebody else inking the backgrounds, you can do all that, can't you?
There's even like people on the street and they're just like, huh?
Yeah, they should do an alternate version where Vinnie Coletta inked in. We could just see blank buildings in the background.
Missed. The opening scenes in 123 are, as we said, the aftermath of Osborn's death. Although I should specify which one. Norman, the Green Goblin. Or did he go to Europe, guys? And he is found as Norman, not as the Green Goblin, because someone mysteriously switched the uniform off of Norman, and you find out a year later that it was Harry who did it. And he starts acting weird in these issues, too, and standoffish, which is understandable since his dad just died, but it's also signs of things to come.
Well, also, hadn't he had his drug problems, Steve? The ever-famous drug issues that did not have the Comics Code of Authority stamp?
Yep. Poor Harry. Will he ever win? Eh. And then we get Gwen Stacy's funeral. Heavy times here. Aunt May's there, and she's got Doc Ock's guards with her because this is at the time where she was living in his mansion, which was a longer time than I remembered. That was for a long time she lived there.
That is so weird.
In the aftermath, believing Spider-Man to be Osborn's murderer, J. Jonah Jameson hires Luke Cage to bring in Spider-Man.
I like how Luke Cage is kind of like, not interested unless you show me the money, honey.
The dialogue is pretty good here. And the money, it's to bring him in dead or alive for $5,000.
Well, you figure that's hours long work. I mean, that's not going to take a lot for a man like Luke Cage. And I know I've busted on Joe Quesada for some of his weird rules, but these are the issues that remind me, like, literally every scene with JJ as a cigar, Robbie as a pipe, and even Luke Cage is smoking. Like, yeah. Okay, I could kind of see why. Maybe he was like, can we have a scene with someone not smoking one
That's
of these
funny.
Things?
And it was fun to revisit this issue and know that we were going to cover it together, because we covered the first 100 issues of Power Man and Iron Fist years ago, starting, like, we did it in like 10, 15 issue chunks, starting on Marvel Noise 273 in June of 2016 and ending on episode 299. So it was familiar to me when I saw that JJJ comes to consider hiring Luke Cage because he heard about him from Phil Fox, who was in the first dozen or so issues of Heroes for Hire and then died. And I looked up the date of the issue he died, and it would be 2 months after this issue hit the stands.
Of course, it's weird that, like, the Luke Cage story is the front page of the Daily Bugle, and Jameson's just seeing it now. You know, you think he'd have looked at a mock-up or something of the
That's a comic.
Bugle being...
That's comic speak for letting the reader in on it, Andrew. I really do like Jonah arriving at Cage's place, though. It's like there's a dude being chucked out the door and down the stairs, and Jonah's like leaning against the wall, and he's such a fish out of water. It's fun to see him shaking in his boots. That office always was getting trashed, right?
Yeah. I feel bad for the coffee machine.
So Cage tackles Spidey onto a rooftop, and first Cage does all the talking and the hitting, and then Spidey does all the talking and the hitting. Spidey ultimately gets the upper hand, and with Cage down, leaves the scene.
I promise I won't do this. This will be my last digression on this, but the ads, there's a full page one for a locksmith study at home. My favorite, it starts with a guy like, another layoff at the plant. I'm still in debt from the last one. Look at this ad. They say with all the violence, there's a great need for locksmith.
Can't we all
so
just
nice
get along?
To profit on the fear of, yeah, the papers like police report crime rate increase. So now you can chip in. You can, and he opens his own locksmith shop. No bosses, no layoffs. And, you know, he's profiting off the increase in violence.
Yep. Ride the wave.
So I imagine there were a lot of budding young stores, security stores that opened after reading this.
I like how, in general, what we've got here is Cage, who's, you know, wrongfully been accused of murder, is wrongfully accusing Spider-Man of murder and going after him and making it personal. And the back and forth between the two of them is really funny, including Cage referencing Batman.
Saying, well, he always had that chip on his shoulder about money.
Yeah, not every hero's Bruce Wayne, you know. Some of us gotta work for a living, sucker.
Sweet Christmas, Steve. Sweet Christmas.
Spidey and Cage fight again, and it's just as much of a back and forth. What a great action-packed issue, right? You put down your 25 cents, you got a lot of action.
20 cents, Steve. 20 cents.
Nice. Spidey finally webs up Cage and explains. We don't get to hear it or see Cage's reaction, but the issue ends with a one-page, two-scene epilogue. The first is Cage returning J. Jonah Jameson's $5,000.
That's what you call putting your money where your mouth is.
Stuffs it right down his throat. And then secondly is Peter not feeling so alone after losing Gwen just two issues earlier. Now he's got MJ on his arm.
Yeah, MJ starts to really come into her own.
Mephisto, take notice.
We're under like this. I like the compression, but like literally he was at her funeral that morning, and then that evening MJ's like, hey, thought you'd come out and you had like an afternoon to mourn and process the death of your girlfriend, right? That's plenty of time to get back up on that horse. And I'm like, you know, like you might give him at least the weekend to kind of.
And what's gotten into Harry? Why are you such a downer these days? Would your dad die this morning?
So I do like the speed of like, yeah, that happened like 6 pages ago. Time to get with it.
Yeah, but 6 pages is like 3 fights ago. Time flies and you're having fun.
A week has gone on.
And I thought this was a fun issue that not only well represented what Cage was all about in just the second year of his title to probably a wider audience reading Spider-Man's book and did him justice. He ended up being the good guy at the end and, you know, giving Jonah his money back, his tender back. And I just thought it was, got a lot of action. It was fun. A good, probably what needed to be a really good palate cleanser after the previous issue.
Yeah.
And was able to be a palate cleanser without being feeling like a fill-in inventory. You know, like, not like, oh man, we just really knocked it out with those two big issues. Quick, grab some pointless nonsense where he's going to fight the fish man or whatever, you know.
Nobody laughs at Mr. Fish.
Issues 124 and 125 of Amazing Spider-Man are near and dear to my heart because they were one of my favorite Power Records productions as a kiddo. In the 70s, Power Records did a bunch of audio dramas that were accompanied by comic books on nice thick paper that they may have even had a little tone when you were supposed to turn the page, that kind of a thing. But these were really fun ways to hear comics done right, because Lord knows the few live-action TV shows we got were pretty bad, and the cartoons were pretty lacking as well, superhero-wise at least.
Peter Pan was another label that did other licensed properties.
Yeah, and yeah.
I don't want to encourage malfeasance, but if you go to certain internet video sites, perhaps a possessive version of a tube, you may be able to search for these things and view them. I mean, you don't always get the book, but you get the audio at least for sure.
Yeah. So yeah.
I've revisited some of these, considering I no longer have a record player of that sort. But the shocking thing for me was 124, the opening splash, left some pretty risque artwork on the cover of the newsstand that I'm kind of surprised.
These art magazines.
So this is the same team in 124 of Conway writing with Kane and Romita doing the pencils, and then Motolaro doing the background inks. And it's an iconic Romita cover that would also be the Power Records cover. It's the Mark of the Man-Wolf. And like you said, at the newsstand, Spidey learns that it's official. The Daily Bugle's position is that Spider-Man is a murderer, and he has killed renowned citizen Norman Osborn.
Next thing you'll tell me, Spider-Man's a menace.
Jameson's going out to dinner with his son, John Jameson, who is the astronaut that Spidey saved in his rocket way back in Amazing Spider-Man number one, forever earning J. Jonah Jameson's spite. And with John...
Does he dye his hair?
With John is going to be his fiance Christine. And John's not quite himself. He's like, he almost looks like a junkie in need of a fix, right? He's like, he's got the shakes. He's sweating. Doesn't look good.
I mean, I guess that's supposed to show his man wolfiness.
I like how Christine gives me a bit of a Gwen Stacy vibe too.
A little bit.
Pete's not adjusting that well post Gwen's death at college. He's all he's like paranoid that everyone's looking at him and thinking there's the guy whose girlfriend just died. And when Flash and Mary Jane try to help, he lashes out at them. It's like, nice one, Petey.
Steve, how did I was never the biggest fan of the transformation of Flash. I feel like it sets up this expectation that, like, jerks you meet are all going to mellow out. And, you know, it doesn't always happen that way. So I always felt it was kind of, like, I like that he likes Spider-Man and didn't like Peter Parker. Look, Peter's got some flakiness. If you don't know he's Spider-Man, he does kind of disappear from events and leave his friend. Like, there are plenty of downsides to him. And I just thought it was kind of weird how he, like, comes around and be like, oh, I was a jerk in high school. And but now that it's been 2 years and I'm in college, I'm a... Now, certainly the Vietnam thing made a lot more sense about that changing.
Yeah, but with that, I like to ignore the retcon, personally. that's what's more comfortable to me. But I think over time, well, a couple of things. First of all, in college, it would have made more sense if they were away at college, because then there's that missing home and people who are familiar, even if they were people you didn't get along with, are people who are a little taste of home and know the same kinds of, had the same sorts of experiences that you did from the same area, and you could get along with people that you might have not have once. I mean, shoot, that's part of college, right? So
that's a good point.
There's that. But then there's also Pete held his ground and I think earned his respect over time. And Pete became handsome and broad-shouldered.
Lost
with the glasses, suffering Steve Ditko, here comes John Romita, you know? And so I think he saw, you know, the whatever, and even just the maturity of your own teenage hormones and everything. I don't know. I bought that Flash mellowed out a little bit more, and it's not like he's his best friend, but he's there, and he's, you know, one of the gang. I don't know. I was able to buy it.
I guess I narratively, I just didn't. It never sat well. I mean, yeah, people do mature, and it just seemed really quick. Like, in high school, he's pretty mean to him.
Yeah,
like, there's no fooling. And then it seems such a short time. Like I said, I get Vietnam. Yeah, that's going to change your entire world in a way. But this, like, he was the big man on campus. I guess maybe he comes down because I don't think Empire State has a big football team or anything. But it seemed like a weird shift for my favorite bully. And I always love the dichotomy of Flash loving Spider-Man but despising Peter. Like I said, you can rightly, he was flaky. But anyways, that's why I don't know how to feel about Flash Thompson as a good guy. Although, you know, it gives us, like I said, Vietnam, and then he gets married, and then he becomes Venom. So, you know, he's got a lot ahead of him.
And Peter also became the ticket to, you know, the connection to Spider-Man in for all the pictures and stuff. So he became, like, I don't know, some people almost saw him as like Spider-Man's, you know, wrongly as like Spider-Man's agent or handler in some ways, you know, both good guys and bad guys. So I think there might have been some of, he might have been, had a little bit of like, oh, he knows Spider-Man, that's pretty cool, he takes pictures of Spidey.
I think it would be the other way around, because he sells them to the Bugle and the Bugle hates, you know what I mean, like, here's a guy that works for a paper that's always ragging on your hero.
Fair enough.
Like, wouldn't you be like, that guy's a jerk?
All right. Point to Andrew on that one. So things are going worse for poor John Jameson. He's going feral with the rise of the moon and scampers across town as a gray wolf man and crashes through J. Jonah Jameson's window.
When we get that whole, you know, like, you're not done in the second person, but close to it, about how, you know, you get the scent of man and you're leaping across the buildings and all that, 70s. Very 70s.
Yeah. Peter's still fuming from his encounter with MJ and Flash. And when he sees the Bugle's accusatory headlines, he decides to go after J. Jonah Jameson too and arrives just behind the Man-Wolf. But hey, that's perfect timing, right? So now they get to tussle. Lots of action here too. I love the pacing of these stories. No wonder I ate this stuff up as a kid. Spidey gets knocked on his head, and Jonah sees the tethered moonstone around the Man-Wolf's neck before it escapes, and makes the connection and realizes that the Man-Wolf is his son.
Dun, dun, dun.
The issue ends with the Man-Wolf tracking Spidey, who's sitting on a rooftop considering his options, and it's like, time for round two. Also, it's funny, Kevin, the moonstone. This isn't the moonstone we know, is it?
No, it isn't.
So that's they kinda funny. They quickly changed that in 75 in Creatures on the Loose number 36. They started calling John Jameson's moonstone the Weird Stone.
The Weird Stone.
And then 3 years later in 1978, they started calling it the Godstone in Marvel Premiere number 45 because it contained the powers and the essence of Other Realms' Star God. I love those stories. That was so fun.
I hope someone gave a small royalty to Steve Ditko with the amount of flop sweat JJJ has in this issue, though. I mean, come on. That's right out of that homage to the classic. The other thing I love is see if you can guess what's going to happen in our Chill Pack conclusion, which we call Wolf Pact. Spoiler, the next one's not called Wolf Pact.
Yeah, and there is no pack of wolves.
It's hard to keep continuity from one mega, but I guess they wanted to save that for Silver Sable.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought they were going to save that for the 90s. Well, there'll be a bunch of wolves teaming up together called the Wolf Pact.
Issue 125 is called Wolf Hunt. Written by Conway with new penciler Ross Andrew. Still with Romita inking the figures and Montalero doing the background inks. This cover is credited to John Romita and Mike Esposito, but I am betting that Tony Montalero inked the backgrounds here too, because if you look, the motel sign reads Mortel instead for Mortalero.
Oh, nice. I like when they put their name in. And not like Gwen, Steve. Not like Gwen.
No. They got to milk it for everything they can. It was just like 3 months before. The Man-Wolf is attacking Spidey as the issue opens, but Spidey's got his spider sense to warn him, right? They tussle, but the Man-Wolf escapes before the moon finishes setting, and Spidey correctly determines that, he probably has a time limit there. Spidey heads home and gives Pete some time to lick his wounds. And then down at the Regal Beagle, Harry is getting all, like, pissy at Flash and Mary Jane.
What's wrong with Harry?
Well, like I said, Vietnam's gonna mellow Flash out, so.
J. Jonah Jameson visits his son John, who's crashed out on the couch. He's got that kooky yellow suit on, and Jameson knows for sure that it's him. My son is a Man-Wolf. John wakes up and tells his father the whole gruesome tale on a secret mission to the moon. John, I mean, this was a bad decision. He stole a moon gem that he found and then kept it secret from his superiors and had a buddy turn it into a choker. Not smart.
Yeah, it seems like maybe he's not a good astronaut. I'm no expert, but are you supposed to turn in that sciencey stuff for them?
He turns into a gray wolf man and kills someone every month. Can't take it off either because it's grafted to his skin.
Oh, is it?
Oy. So the moon rises, you know, right behind Jonah, and John changes and starts swatting around J. Jonah Jameson escapes through the roof skylight, attacks some guy in the alley. It's a pathetic tableau, Andrew.
Well, I do like that in the 70s we had our guys with the switchblades. I think they may have gone out of fashion, but dang, they set the time and the place when you have the guy in the, you know, cut off sleeves with the switchblade. When you're a Jet, you're a Jet, Steve.
John, as the man wolf chases his fiance, who arrives in a convertible there, and
a convertible from 1940 or something. What a crazy looking car.
Here comes Twiggy. Spidey figures it out. Oh yeah, John wears a weird yellow spacesuit under his civvies. That must be. And arrives on the scene just in time. This time, Spidey yanks off the moonstone. Youch!
Yeah, that looks painful. Spidey's like, oh, I thought it was just dangling there. I didn't realize it was fused to your...
I didn't realize that was a real beard. Whoops.
Sorry about that. I just took out a huge clump of hair with the gem.
So the man-wolf changes back to John and collapses. Spidey throws the gem into the river. Kaplunk. Like, not sure that's the best decision either.
Yeah.
Oh, Steve, come on. Next time he's going to have to fight Salmon Wolf when the full moon rises.
And then Spidey pretty much tells J. Jonah Jameson to go fry salts.
I love that. This ends hot, like Jameson, the craven guy worried about publicity. Great two-panel ending that is great, where he just tells... I really thought this one ended super strong. He's rightly to get in his face. Papa Jonah. Christine, some kind of moron.
All right. As a treat, let's treat everyone to the 1970s Power Records version of this tale. And then on the other end, we'll be back with a few recent reads to close things out.
Power Records presents The Mark of the Man-Wolf. The Amazing Spider-Man has many friends, but Jonah Jameson, publisher of the powerful Daily Bugle, isn't one of them.
What is this, Robertson? Be kind to criminals, Day?
Now, Jonah, all I said was we'd better be sure about our facts before we publicly condemn Spider-Man. If it turns out he is innocent...
Innocent? Maybe you don't understand, Robertson. A man has been killed, a man who happened to be a good friend of mine, and I believe that wall-crawling menace is responsible. I know it. So get this, Robertson. Since I can't hire someone to bring that killer in, I intend to see justice done another way, by making the public demand his capture at once.
I'm only your city editor, Jonah, but I think you're making a grave mistake.
Wait a second, Robbie. We've got company.
I'll talk to you later then, Jonah. Hi, Dad. Thought I'd drop by to pick you up for dinner. It's time you met my fiancée, Christine Saunders.
Fiancée? Well, I must say, it's about time. We were finished, weren't we, Robbie?
If you say so, Jonah. I don't believe I've had the pleasure.
Sorry, Robbie. This is my son, John. John's just retired from astronautics. He was one of the last men to make a moonwalk. Son, this is Joe Robertson, my city editor.
Glad to meet you, John. Same here, Mr. Robertson. Sorry we've got to rush off.
Moments later, in the hall outside.
Dad, would you excuse me a moment?
John, are you all right, son? You're white as a sheet and you're trembling.
I'm sorry, Dad. Got a touch of the flu.
The flu? You better take care of yourself, John.
Like I said, Dad, sorry. I've been under a strain. I'd better get home.
Later the same evening, in a brownstone overlooking the Hudson River, a door opens, releasing a sliver of yellow light and the stumbling form of a young man.
Nothing I can do. It's happening again. I'm changing! Changing!
And in several seconds, we see before us a man-wolf. Whoever was present in this creature a moment ago is gone. Now there is only an animal, seeking someone. It runs through the darkness. Now and then it climbs and leaps from roof to roof as it hunts its quarry. And that quarry is man, one particular human, a head. the man-wolf thinks. The one I hunt is ahead. One final leap, and he looks across at the human being he seeks. And in one sleek motion, the man-wolf leaps.
What in the name of heaven? Who are you and what's the meaning of this? Do you realize who I am? The name is Jonah Jameson, my friend, and I'll have you know J. Jonah Jameson is not the kind of man to be amused by some sort of infantile joke. I demand an explanation for this ridiculous costume. I'm warning you.
It is then, of course, that Jameson realizes the creature before him is not wearing a costume. And it is then, naturally, that J. Jonah Jameson becomes afraid. And by then, you see, it's already far too late.
Good Lord in heaven! No!
We hate to leave J. Jonah Jameson at a time like this, but a few minutes earlier, in another part of the city, Peter Parker, boy student, who is otherwise known as Spider-Man, is passing a newsstand. One glimpse of the Daily Bugle and...
That does it. This time, Jameson's gone too far. The Spider-Man Menace, a new series by J. Jonah Jameson. Every time something happens in this town, Jameson blames me. According to Mr. Warren, Spider-Man should be hunted down like a mad dog. Innocent till proven guilty. Remember that, Jameson? That's supposed to be the way we live. Why don't you leave me alone, Jameson? Why don't you leave me alone? I've had it, Jameson. You want me guilty? You've got it. I'll show you a menace, Jameson. You just better hope your insurance is paid up, buddy. Because, mister, you're gonna need it. I never asked to be bitten by that blasted radioactive spider. But I was JJJ, and I've tried to make the best of it. But you just won't see that, will you? Maybe after tonight you'll be a little saner, JJJ. Maybe after you get a taste of what my webbing can really do, you'll leave me alone.
In some people, anger can burn for hours. But in others, it lasts only a minute or two. That's the way it is with Spider-Man, sometimes. Luckily for J. Jonah Jameson, this is one of those times. By coincidence, Spider-Man seems to have arrived at Jameson's apartment just at the right moment.
Now, that's a kick in the head. Either Jameson's taken to keeping pets or... All right, you saw a werewolf.
Spider-Man, you're in this too!
In case you hadn't noticed, Williams, I just saved your life. Say, Jonah, I didn't think you were so lovable. I'd say White Fang here had a grudge against you. Think about it, Jameson. Have you insulted any werewolves lately? They don't scare me a bit. I've been spoiling for a good fight, and it's about time I...
Our hero isn't faring too well. Look out, Spider-Man! Look out! Spider-Man, unconscious. It wouldn't be fair to call Jonah Jameson a coward, but at this moment, he is frightened halfway to death. But not frightened enough to resist a snarling man-wolf.
What? What do you want with me? Why me? I've never done anything to you. Never attacked you. Why did you pick me?
As though in answer, the man-wolf backs off, and Jameson's eyes draw downward, and he sees what he has not seen before. Man stares at wolf, and wolf stares in turn, and something passes between the two. A wordless communication. A plea for help. Then, without another sound, the man-wolf springs from the window, leaving behind him one very quiet, middle-aged entrepreneur and a slowly stirring Spider-Man.
Jonah, what happened to tall, dark, and hairy? Don't tell me you beat them all by your lonesome. If that gets out, we'll have to put you up against the heavyweight champ. Say, what's the deal, Jameson? Where are those snappy comebacks?
You're not going after him, Spider-Man. I won't allow it.
You won't what? After that character tried to kill you?
That doesn't matter. It's not important. If you attack him, I'll make you pay, you wall-crawling menace.
Look, I'm not your biggest fan, but that monster...
Spider-Man, I swear to you, if you move one muscle against that creature, I'll report this as an attempt on my life by you. Am I clear?
Loud and clear. Next time, remind me not to play Good Samaritan. Some people have a weird sense of gratitude.
Grateful? How can I be grateful to the man I hate most in the world? How can I be grateful when the mad killer he saved me from is my son?
Hours pass. The man-wolf leaps and lunges from roof to roof, searching. It can sense its prey. It seems like no other the man-wolf has ever sought. The one who attacked me, who sought to kill me, he is there. The one who must die.
Funny. He started this evening all knotted up. Now I I feel kind of loose. It was the fight with the man-wolf. Somehow it released all my tensions, worked out all my anger. Almost. I can dig the world.
You spoke too soon, Spider-Man. Too soon.
Oh, no, not the man-wolf again. What are you doing here? If you're looking for a fight, look out. You're pushing us over the edge. We're going to fall. Newspaper of his, but even JJJ couldn't pay a man to go this far, not to the point of suicide. For real, Bunker, this doesn't quite explain why you want to attack me.
But then, as our puzzled hero chances to glance down at his struggling assailant.
Wait a minute. I've seen it before. But where? I can't remember where. Huh? Whoops. I blew it. Lost my attention, my grip, and next on the list is my life.
But a new element is added to the picture.
The moon. It's setting. And from the legends, that means you're due for a transformation. Just as I thought. As soon as you realize what's going to happen when the moon goes down, you split. I'm sorry. You're not getting off that easy. Suddenly, you've caught my interest with that pendant thing. And there's no way I'm letting you slip out of my hands until... Knock on the head you gave me a couple of hours ago in Jameson's pad. Oh, my head. Come on, Parker, you've got to snap out of it. You've got to think. Where have you seen that pendant before? Where? Where? Where?
Though he isn't aware of it, our hero is on the right track, and so is a certain publisher.
This is my son's apartment. All I can do is pray that I'm wrong. John? Son, are you there? Blasted boy, answer me! Oh, dear Lord, that costume. I'd recognize it anywhere. It's true, then. My son is a man-wolf. John! John, wake up! I demand an explanation at once!
Dad, is that you?
Of course it's me, John. And I'm alone. Now, will you tell me what's happened to you? What sort of insanity?
I wish I were insane, Dad. It'd be easier to accept than this...
For a moment, Jonah J. Jameson stares at the man he calls his son. And when he speaks again, his voice is softer.
Tell me, John. Please. I want to help.
If only you could. There's nothing you or anyone can do. This is my nightmare. I've got to get out of it myself, just as I got into it, all by myself. It all started 6 months ago at Cape Canaveral with the takeoff of a special unscheduled moon flight. It was the same as the previous public flight every way. It would be mine. Back on Earth, I had a friend who worked in the quarantine center. With a little coaxing, I got him to borrow the moon rock for me. I had my rock made into a pendant, and I took to wearing it around my neck. Didn't think much about it at first, until one night, I was taking the turnpike up to New York for a late dinner date with my fiancée, Christine. Something happened to me. Something inexplicable. That's funny. Suddenly I feel tired, exhausted. Mustn't be getting enough sleep. Either that or it's this blasted night driving. It wasn't the night driving. It was the moon. The sudden light touched me. I glanced up, and it was then that it began. The pendant, glowing, something about the moon. Lord in heaven, what's happening to me? Every month since then, I've been transformed. And to date, none of my efforts to stop that transformation have succeeded. Not even the radiation suit I had made to cut out the lunar rays. The first time I wore it, last night, the suit came apart. Just like my chances to see this madness through alive.
Don't talk like that, son. It's obvious you haven't thought this out at all. Why not just take off the pendant?
Don't you think I've thought of that, Dad? I have tried to remove the stone, but it's too late. It's grafted itself to my skin, permanently.
7 hours have passed.
7 hours? And now it's time to get on the trail of the man-wolf.
In another part of the city, at that certain brownstone, we find...
It's not like John to ignore a date. I hope he isn't sick. He has been acting oddly these past few weeks. Hmm, that's funny. And I can hear the bell ringing upstairs. And if that isn't John up in the window, I need glasses. He wants to pretend I'm not here. All right, I'm not here.
And upstairs.
Now it's your turn, Dad. Better leave. Something changes in me when I become that thing. I want to hurt the people I love, like Christine and like you.
Now, son, if you're trying to tell me the reason you attacked me was to kill me, that's utter nonsense. You wanted my help, don't you see that, John? And you couldn't stop yourself, your animal self, from...
Meanwhile, a few blocks away, Spider-Man starts on his moonlight journey. Hurry, Spider-Man, hurry!
Great, what a good night's sleep can do. I almost feel like myself again. Now, what was going through my mind? A pendant. Hey, wait a minute. My subconscious must have been working overtime because it just put two and two together and came up with four. That costume the man-wolf was wearing, it wasn't fabric. It was some sort of insulation material, the kind used on spacesuits for astronauts. And it just hit me who I know that has an astronaut son. And who was attacked by a werewolf in astronaut clothing? J. Jonah Jameson.
A quick glance in the Manhattan telephone directory tells our hero what he needs to know, and so...
Maybe I'll have some good luck for a change. Bingo! Looks like I've hit the jackpot. It's the man-wolf. Here we go again, Wolfie. This time, I have a theory to try out. It's my guess that pendant is what's making you a werewolf. And so it has to come off, even if I have to tear it off.
Spider-Man, what's happening to him? He's changing.
Dear Lord, I didn't realize. The pendant had grafted itself onto his skin.
The transformation begins, and the identity of the monster becomes apparent. All too painfully apparent.
John. Son, are you all right?
He's just fine, Jameson, now that this thing's off him. Better get him a doctor, though. Fast.
Doctor? What? The publicity?
Publicity? Your son's life was at stake, not to mention the lives of people he might have killed. Let's hope we stopped him in time.
Johnny, are you okay? Mr. Jameson, is he okay?
Answer her, Jameson. Tell her everything's real swell. Maybe someday you'll even begin to believe it yourself.
Spider-Man, wait, I...
Save it for the papers, Jonah. Save it for tomorrow.
And so ends another adventure of the Amazing Spider-Man.
All right, how cool is that? They did a pretty good job putting out those radio dramas like that. I had a lot of fun listening to those as a kid. We didn't have DVDs and VHSs and ways to watch things over again. So, you know, other than the parsing out of some superhero-related cartoons and some of the terrible live-action shows that existed during the 70s, this was a fun way to get, you know, to see the comics come alive, right, Andrew?
Oh, well, they also had, and they still have these today, those, like, weird little kiddie picture books. But yeah, I would listen to, I have that weird thing some kids have where you can just listen to the same thing over and over again. So I would just put these on because I have those little suitcase record player. I don't know
nice.
If you have one of those.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're all totally. Plastic bits and everything. And you just open it up, plug it in and open the top. And the album is bigger than the record player.
Even a 45.
And flip along with these things, and even just have it playing while you're doing something else, you know, while I'm coloring over some of the excellent artwork.
Right, cutting up my comics.
Devaluing my collectibles.
So an addendum to my bit last episode covering roughly the first half or so of the King in Black event and the related tie-ins, I want to add that since then, I've learned that while the first issue wasn't anything particularly special or interesting, issue number 2 of King in Black, Planet of the Symbiotes, is a fun selection of tales for this tie-in anthology book. Both of the stories here were a lot of fun. The first one stars American Kaiju, with a creative team of writer Mark Bernardin and artist Kyle Hotz. Ding, 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 ding. This looks amazing. You get Kyle Hotz depicting the kaiju versus a kaiju-sized venomy thing. I mean, it's so cool. And then the second story by Jeffrey Thorne and Jan Basil Dua has the Prowler, Hobie Brown, taking up the guise of the Hornet. Remember when they had those, like, the Hornet and the, what was that one guy who was, like, the cloaky, shadowy guy, and it was, like, who is Spider-Man, you know, and they had these other things. So, that he's taking up that Hornet guise now, Hobie. And then, without spoiling anything, although by now this is far in the past, it's the end of King in Black 4, of the main title, brought in elements from a beloved series from my youth that starred a team of explorers that came from inner space. And it was used very well here. Very well. And I just, as a little bit of a hinty kind of a little spoiler, is like, was Star-Lord the first Captain Universe? Really cool. And Star-Lord hasn't even appeared in this book yet. I'm just stretching things out as across the Marvel Universe and expanding from the tidbit of info that they drop on us at the end of 4.
Well, he is the hero that could be you, Steve, so...
If it could be me, it could be him. What have you guys been reading?
I had to jump on Andrew's bit. I don't think he read this one. Andrew, did you read this one?
Well, you didn't give me an issue, so I don't
okay.
know.
Karnak what says...
Which one?
What if 61? What if Spider-Man's parents destroyed his family?
No, I don't think I'm collecting batches of what ifs and going through them somewhat slowly, but I don't think 61 is not, I mean, I bought the one you told me to, but it wasn't 61.
So this was $1.50 US, 205 Canadian.
So wait, was this would have been the second, was this the second series
yes,
or the first
the
series?
Second yeah, series. Second series. I just pulled it out
Spider-Man
of the box.
Man.
Well, I just, when I heard that price point, I was like, wait, that can't be the...
So Spider-Man's holding Mary Jane, and then you have a bunch of villains grinning evilly, like the Vulture, like 90s Vulture. Chameleon, his evil parents. And then you have Captain America and Human Torch. Looking kind of concerned or shocked. And
so
Aunt May's lying at his feet.
So in the continuity we had that Peter Parker's parents were spies and all that stuff that had come out by this point, I assume?
Well, I'll jump right to a bit at the end of this issue. They tell you to read Pursuit. They're like, you want to know more? You should be reading... The beginning of, they don't really say the Clone Saga, but basically the beginning of the Clone Saga right now. So it must have not been that long after his parents were revealed to be crazy robots.
Right, exactly. That's the time they're touching upon in the, what was it, the march up to maybe Amazing 400, I think?
Yeah.
Just before the second Clone Saga.
But funny enough, the writer here is Kurt Busiek.
Yep.
I always find it weird when he did like these one-off stories. And they have three different pencilers here. I think it's three pencilers.
Make it four.
That's four. Yeah. At first I thought that was all one name.
Andrew...
I was just going to say Wildman.
Yeah, Andrew Wildman, Jim Amash, Yaniger, and Jarvinen.
It's kind of a strange batch of artists. Like, it's more, I guess, more untold and cartoony-ish.
Yeah, it has an almost Waringo-y kind of a look.
Yeah. So, yeah, this Aunt May's, like, on to these parents. So then they're like, oh, well, this isn't going to go well with our plan. So they freak out and do some murdering. And then it's weird too, because Aunt May's just like, sort of like, you're Spider-Man. It's just like this, just some like throwaway thing, because she's murdered. And then Mary Jane is murdered. And it just, it gets pretty weird from there, where then his like ID is revealed and they like frame him, and then like they're robots and they have like a secret plan. I'm not 100% clear on what their plan is. Like, I guess you're supposed to be thinking about the clone saga and everything, but this is like after the fact. I'm thinking, I'm like, that must be the thing that they don't reveal really in this issue,
right?
Because this is still so much tied in with that, that it's weird. It's a little weird that we got to report to the person that we never see, because I wonder if all the, like, the what ifs must have been getting more, the ones that were close to the events, they must have been like promoing like books, yes, in the main line.
Well, especially more than I thought. Especially the later issues of the second series, right? They've done all the things. They've done all of the ones that made them even have a second series, right? Like, hey, here's 20 ideas. We can have a second series. Yeah. They've gone through all those. Now they're on 61 of the second series, and they're starting to tie it more into the line, and certainly the series would end with the creation of Spider-Girl and the MCU, right?
That, I think it's Secret
M
Wars.
Squared or whatever.
Yeah, that's towards the end, but I think we covered the last issue, because it was on Marvel Unlimited for some reason. It might have been actually an Unlimited segment, and it was like Secret Wars 3 or something. It was some weird... Oh, no, I think it was Secret Wars 25 years later.
Yes, that 114. It was also Jay Farber, who I always liked. I think he writes... He still does indie work, so he does a series through Image and stuff like that. But he also writes TV or movies or something, too.
Yep.
So, a big fan.
Yeah.
It's funny in this story where Jameson is all like, oh, Spider-Man. And then they have a Daily Bugle headline, Spider-Man exposed, kills wife and relative. So I'm like, oh, JJJ. I was right this whole time. I'm like, well, maybe just Spidey just snapped it at the end, and you, like, this whole time wasn't a long con, guys. And then he takes out some frustration on JJJ, runs afoul of Cap, the Human Torch, and then of course you have to segue into Spider-Man's current going on with that modern vulture and the chameleon. I also have inserted in this issue, because they were doing this at the time, was this is introducing Marvel Master Prints. So you have like an uncut insert of three Spider-Man cards, which aren't warping this comic a lot yet, but I always wonder about this. Like, I don't see any difference in value, but I always remember, like, that first Hobgoblin appearance. They're like, well, does it have the Lakeside tattoo in it? It's worth more.
Yep.
So, like, is so many of these issues had different things like this later on. I'm like, does anyone care? But also having, like, some thick cardboard inserted into the book has got to have some effect.
I ripped that stuff right out, because I don't want stuff getting in the way of my comic book. I'm trying to read a comic book here.
But you have to be careful with the book if you're ripping something like this out.
Damn.
It even has a perforated edge. You could sort of take the cards out if you want and leave that little thing in there, like that little board that's left.
You can get it out. You got to be an old pro, but...
Obviously. So yeah, he's upset about the chameleon. Oh, it was you and everything. And then chameleon's like, oh, I'm going to turn into MJ. You won't do anything. And then he throws the chameleon out the window and murders him. And then Spidey's just kind of like, oh, he's dead. And then Spidey's kind of just like, oh, well, my life was already over anyway, so what, I murdered someone. So the Flash is trying to is in Spidey's number one fan, so he's like, oh, there's no way Spidey's like up to this. So he's like going around to all these different people, the Avengers, whoever, like trying to clear his name. But it's like, well, he might have been okay at one point. But it's almost that Black Widow thing, who also appears here, where it's like, well, if you're going to treat me like a criminal, I might as well go murder, out and murder some people and act like a criminal. And then they find you, you're not a criminal, but you murdered someone already. But things just pretty much just get worse for Spidey as he runs across his crazy robotic parents again. And then we get this big sideways splash of... I guess it's pretty representative of the Marvel Universe at that time. You have some of the new Warriors here. You have Darkhawk. Looks a little weirdly buff. Sleepwalker and a bunch of guys are like, Spidey, it's over. Like, turn yourself in. And Spidey's like, I guess he's had enough, right? Aunt May's dead. MJ's dead. So he pretty much just turns himself in and he's like, yeah, I won't fight this. So pretty sad ending.
That's your what if ending.
Yeah, then they have this weird panel to end this issue, and it's like, who's in the shadows? Who was really behind everything? And then I'm like, yeah, who? And then it says, well, go read our books. And I'm like, I don't think this is supposed to be Norman Osborn.
It was Liz Allen. Yeah, I like the grim ending, but I think you might have hit upon something, Steve, about this second series. And I wonder if having more time, like now it's fun to read them, but at the time, like 45 is what if Barbara Ketch had become Ghost Rider. And that title, he'd only been Ghost Rider for like maybe 3 years tops. And it feels like that's a quick turnaround to have like this, like, is there as much meaning in it? I mean, I guess Ghost Rider was super hot. That one also ends with her, you know, giving up ever then and dying, and because she gives into the spirit of vengeance, and it's you know, well done. I mean, it's Ron Mars, Dale Eaglesham, Brian Garvey. Like, it's a good, like, what you want in a what if. Like, it goes off the rails quickly to reinforce that what really happened was the right thing. But at the time, I was like, reading it now, it's fun. But then I'm like, yeah, that would have been like the new Ghost Rider just a few years ago. Does it have the same impact as looking at events that happened more years, you know, more distance between the established continuity and the what if? I don't know. Steve, any thoughts? Kevin, do you need that space between the event and the what if?
Yep.
Yeah, usually, unless you're going to do something pretty specific, I think. Like, it's probably okay if you do, like, what if they lost Galactic Storm after Galactic Storm?
It seemed that I kind of, yeah, then it became like the, whatever the event was, let's have a bunch of what ifs. Like, oh, what if, you know, Chocolate Rain didn't happen the way it did type of thing.
This says the next issue, though, is what if Wolverine battled Weapon X? And I'm wondering, was this around Wolverine 50?
It has a quasi Barry Windsor Smith type looking cover, even though it's done by Ron Randall. But they definitely went with that Marvel Comics Presents looking, you know, Wolverine with the equipment on and the tubes and stuff when he's just escaped from the vats.
So that might be more time. Like, they didn't go to the current thing every issue.
I'm glad to see it. Yeah, I don't know. I hadn't thought about it till, like I said, Steve just mentioned it. I'm like, yeah, it does feel like some of them were right. So, but I went, Kevin, you told me before I watched WandaVision, but you said before I watch it, I have to get a paper copy of What If Volume 1, Number 38, which is weird because it's on Unlimited. But I went and got one.
You have this on tape, Andrew, where I told you to do this?
And then it's What If featuring, and it's three stories. So it's, what it is it's future projecting stories. And the first one is Vision and the Scarlet Witch. And what I love is that Marvel, and I think we've certainly Steve must have talked about this, how iconic and instantly recognizable the characters' title fonts are. So yep. It has all three of them, like the Daredevil, which is kind of slanted, the shadowy Captain America, and the big block Vision, and then the Scarlet Witch on the bottom. And it just, like, you see those and it brings you to that character in that place. And I sure really does. Like it.
I so wish that they had kept better records editor to editor so that there was a better trail of who designed what logos. I would love a book of all these different logos and who made them and some comments by the guys who did the logos. Talking to somebody like Carl Potts, who commissioned several different logos and did a few himself, including, I think, the Punisher logo with the scope sight in it, unless it's Kevin Nolan. I mix those two guys up. It might have been Potts who commissioned it from Nolan, but there's some probably good stories there behind some of those classic logos.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you have to like the title, or like, if you don't care about Daredevil, you're not going to be like, oh, I love the logo, but I don't read the book. But it's just such a great shorthand to trigger all these concepts and ideas just from that. But what's interesting, not only the three things, but only one of them has a what if title, which I think is kind of weird. It's the second story. What if Sharon Carter had not died? But the Vision of Scarlet Witch one is just called The Leaving. And the last one, the Daredevil one, is just called Daredevil 2013. So they don't have what if in the title.
Isn't that Shadowland, Kevin?
The title of 2013.
Isn't that Shadowland?
Oh, maybe.
No, I'm just kidding.
So the first one, The Leaving. And what this is why they don't have, like, what if it's just a projection into what could be the future. Avengers Mansion 50 years from today. And I love that. Don't put a date or a year. Otherwise, we're all laughing about that Daredevil 2013. This is just 50 years from now.
Still laughing about it.
It's David Michelinie. Patty is the penciler. Just P-A-T-Y.
That's got to be Patty Cochran, right?
I can't think of who else it would be.
Patty with one T? Patty with one T hanging out at Marvel?
And Andy Muschinski for inks.
Yep.
And it's a new Avengers team, except it has Thor and Vision, of course, who are ageless, and a elfin-looking Iron Man that I really like, with, like, pointed ears and kind of little fancy design on his chest, but still red and yellow design in Jocasta. You know, like all the people who would live. And Jarvis is long gone, but his nephew took over the butler business.
Oh, no.
What a great family.
Get out.
Thanks, Mom and Dad, for...
And it's got a great, I love that Vision and Scarlet Witch is an old lady in this fancy high-tech wheelchair thing with white hair everywhere and a red, like, I really think it's a cool image of her, and they're still romantically involved.
And you have to say that
what's particularly odd is that in this version Thor has gone back to the Don Blake thing, which he at times uses and doesn't use. But in this case, it's important because Don Blake, the doctor, you know, is checking on. And obviously Wanda is not long for this world. And it has a nice moment between Wanda, Vision, Jocasta. And it's a real character piece. I don't really think it added a lot to my understanding of WandaVision, the TV show. But I trust that Kevin told me to seek this out for a reason, so... no spoilers, Kevin. I will figure out why I had to have a print issue of this and how it connects to WandaVision. Not going to spoil the twist ending, but it's a sweet, nice one. The Captain America one is what if Sharon Carter had not died? That's
you
an old...
Like in the 200s?
No, this is from 1983, so...
Yeah.
This is when she died the first time, for real.
Oh,
yeah.
First time.
And it's an old washed-up Cap who, you know, they think shouldn't go out anymore because, you know, he's old and can't get it together and has his motorcycle is now like a sky cycle.
Sharon was his great love that was lost. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't until... Was it Brubaker who brought Carter back, too?
Mark Wade.
Wade, right, right. Now I remember. And it was like, with no explanation.
Yeah, and it's like, everyone's like, whoa, she's all different now.
Right, with the Wade Garney, yep.
Yeah, yeah, that's good stuff.
It's just funny that in the TV show and everything, Peggy Carter has so much more in ascendancy than Sharon. Although Sharon, I guess, Kevin, you probably wanted me to read this for the... I think she's in that Falcon Winter Soldier thing, but I don't know how you're getting advanced copies of that.
With WandaVision being so good, I'm looking forward to the Falcon Winter Soldier one, even though it's only 6 episodes. I mean, now I'm thinking, all right, it's going to be good because WandaVision, the production value is so good.
I'm waiting for the audience reaction to flip, where this one they were mad, then happy. Now for the next one, they're going to be happy and then mad.
This is Rick Margopoulos, Dan Reed, Mike Esposito. And what happens is Cap fights basically the gang from Dark Knight Returns. So I think Frank Miller might have been reading this issue. You know, that like they have weird spiky hairdo and funky sunglasses and ripped shorts and everything. Like, not like any, the shorthand for futuristic gangs are always weird hairdos, sunglasses, eye patches, all that stuff.
Mohawk.
Escape from New York.
clown outfit one of them seems to have. And simultaneously, the Red Skull is, trying to make his comeback, which, he would have. Obviously, in the regular continuity, goes and gets the Steve Rogers clone body and all that fun stuff. But here he's dying and getting experimental treatments. So while Captain America is out barely beating these guys, the Red Skull in his chair of death, very reminiscent of those Kirby Captain America, where he lures Cap to the island and has the little, all those guys around Cap. I would love that issue. And he's like, I have a device implanted in me where if you defeat me and I have a heart attack, your family who I've kidnapped die, or I'm just going to kill you. So either way, I win. And during the course of the battle, the Red Skull's son comes out. I mean,
out of
you
where?
Know, it had to be continued out of this too.
Oh,
Heil Father, my favorite, Heil Father. And I'm really glad we've returned. You know, what's great about these comics from the early 80s is there's no politics. So like when the Skull says, there has been a resurgence of the radical right, a movement that is inflexible and uncompromising. A radical right inspired by my henchmen. So, you know, no politics at all in 83 about various things. So, but anyways, Cap defeats Old Skull. The Young Skull runs off. I'm going to get you. And Cap is miraculously able to throw a perfect shield throw. He had booted one earlier to save his loved ones. So, yeah. And then the last story is Daredevil in 2013. And you want to know what? It exactly predicts where the continuity is going to go. And a wonderful, it's Alan King Kupperberg does it all. And as he noted in Marvel Continuity, Foggy Nelson is the vice president in 2013. Oh. And the Black Widow is the president of the new Republic, Russian Republic. Like, that's exactly where we were in 2013, right, guys?
Wow.
That's Daredevil continuity. Kevin, you're a big Daredevil fan, isn't that track?
Daredevil's best when he's dealing with international politics.
And it's a weird Kupperberg. I don't want to say anything bad, but it feels rushed. Like the artwork is.
Kupperberg is a decent penciler, and does good composition, does good storytelling. Did a fantastic cover on this issue that I really like. The forms are all fantastic, but then like the finishing, the inks over the top of the forms are, it's amateurish. It's terrible.
Yeah, so they're aged up at times, and that can be a little tricky to track. as well. And so Black Widow as president is giving an address to the United Nations. In our world, in the actual continuity of 2013, Daredevil was smack in that Wade Somni run.
Okay.
I don't know if you guys remember that one.
Yeah, happy the Daredevil.
2011 one. Yeah, so.
Swashbuckling happy. Daredevil.
I don't remember Foggy being vice president in that run, but, you know, these things coming down.
No, but he was coming.
He was dealing with something else.
Yeah, but he was on the mend. It was in remission.
So anyways, she gives an address. There's an attack, and there's a, you know, Daredevil has been somewhat withdrawn from the world after the death of his wife. But after an attack at the UN, Black Widow, president of the Russian Republic, gets in her Black Widow garb. And I'm kind of annoyed they didn't, like, update it. It's like the black, like, I'm like, come on, she's like the president. Should be the colors of her country and everything. And Daredevil go up to the top, and it's old man Kingpin. And they fight him, and Kingpin ends up getting knocked off the roof of the UN and falling to his death, and that snaps old Matt back into life. And it was just a weird, like, an odd story of putting Foggy as the vice president, which seems like there's been no indication of his as president of Russia. Definitely like a pullout of like what's going on here.
Well, they couldn't have Foggy and Natasha be equal, so they had to make him vice president instead of president. Pretty silly. Yeah.
So just a fun, but yeah. Anyways, I think Kevin wanted me to read for the first two stories, but I don't see the connection yet.
Well, you still have two episodes to go, so.
Yes, at the time of WandaVision, at the time of this recording, there's two left, and I just rewatched a bunch of them with the rest of the family that wanted to. Now has heard the buzz and wanted to watch it, which was great. With them being just 25-minute episodes, you can knock them off pretty quick. It's a lot of fun.
Oh, dang it, Steve. I was hoping you'd be like, no, you missed out. Too late. You should have watched when we were all watching. Now you don't get to watch.
Wow. Now you just wait for syndication.
And finally, in episode 7, there is a mid-credits scene at the end. The end credits are like 10 minutes long. They're insufferable. But there hasn't been any little mid-credits scene, and finally there was. So don't miss it.
Well, I have one more recent read.
What you got?
I got Avengers, or The Avengers, Earth's Mightiest Heroes, who are available at that moment. When you hear about Enter the Phoenix, your reaction might be, oh no, it's the Phoenix again. Which I think is fair at this point, right?
But they've been building this Phoenix thing into this title since it began. And it's about time they got to whatever it's all about, don't you think?
Yeah, like they've all had moments with those, in quotes, Avengers of way, 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 way in the past.
Ancient Avengers.
Yeah. Which I've enjoyed. I thought it was really cool. So then we get to this Phoenix story where Phoenix is returning to get a host. Phoenix loves Earth. Here we have Jason Aaron and two different artists.
Wait, Jason Aaron's going to be the host of the Phoenix?
Yeah. And he's giving it to someone. So you have Javier Guerrero and Luca Maresca. Both, like, I think one of them is the Stormbreaker, right? Am I mistaken?
I don't know.
I think one of these guys is one of the Stormbreakers.
Sure. Let's say yes.
They're not Young Guns anymore. They're Stormbreakers now.
If the art's good, I'll just enjoy
it. Anyways, yeah, like, I think the art is exciting and dynamic enough, and you had McGinnis with the other art, and this is of a level enough to keep that crazy level of excitement going, which is cool. Because I don't like all the designs in here of everyone as a Phoenix. I'll get to that. Why is everyone the Phoenix? But it's for a story purpose, and it might only be for a couple pages. So
wait a minute, didn't that happen though in the Avengers
like
X-Men?
AVX?
Yeah, right. I remember I remember Emma Frost in the Phoenix costume there.
And Cyclops, didn't he get a turn as well?
Namor, yeah. Namor did too.
It's funny that Namor's in here too, babbling about the Phoenix. So,
well, once you've been a ring bearer, you know it affects you. And
but you know how Namor has been off killing people and having his secret death squad, and
there's almost as many Namors out there as Thanos's. It seems they all act different and do different things.
He needs his vest, Steve, to
it's
regulate.
It's true. He'll be normal again. Yeah. It'll keep him smooth.
So it's just funny when everyone... Well, not that everyone gets along in here. Like, it's a big cast, and some of them are confrontational with their debates, but no one's like Namor, like, spitting on you and arguing and everything. But anyhow, we had X of Swords, which was a tournament. People that know about Japanese manga are all like, oh, they do a lot of tournaments over there. People love the tournaments. So I'm like, what's the odds that we're going to see another tournament, right? And that's what this story is. Awesome tournament battles. Yeah. Which really turns things around.
Huh.
Because you have Black Panther as the Phoenix versus Man-Thing as the Phoenix. So basically when you're chosen to go into your battle... Like, you're given the Phoenix powers to do the battle. So then it's not just, like, some boring, oh, we're going to have some regular things. Like, oh, Cap will face off against, I don't know, Namor or something. But you have things like, oh, it's Shanna the She-Devil and Zabu versus Devil Dinosaur on the blue area of the moon. Hmm. I mean, now I'm excited.
Yeah, some of my favorite Avengers.
And then the way some of these fights go down, it's like they're not either open to the Phoenix or they do something that the Phoenix doesn't like. You also have, you know, that new-ish Red Widow versus Howard the Duck. I'm like, I'm there. Sounds awesome. And Doctor Strange's kitchen sounds awesome.
So my thought was that this is the big story that Aaron pitched when taking on the Avengers title to begin with, since the seeds of it have been strung throughout the series, including in the first issue. And so I thought this is going to be this big story, which it sounds like it is going to be, and I thought I would just let them pile. You know, I've said it before, I'm like a trade reader who picks up monthlies, so I was going to let these pile up and then read them when they were maybe an issue away from being completed, so then when the final issue hit, boom, I get the full effect of it. But it sounds like maybe this is doable as a monthly, as a serialized thing?
I think so.
Yeah, all right.
I mean, there's a lot
of... Is it safe, Kevin? Is it safe?
And there's a lot of, like, neat stuff, like, in between the fights where they're trying to trick the Phoenix, or, like, people are... There's other mechanisms at play, and people are like, ah, what if we do this? Or what if we fight outside the designated fight, or all this stuff? And then the Phoenix is just like, stop screwing around, guys. Stop what you're doing. Like, the Phoenix has their rules, but you don't know what the rule. But it's not like, it hasn't been like X of Swords or anything. Like, this is a different level of tournament-ness.
Neat.
So, yeah. Very entertaining.
Man, maybe the Shi'ar were right. Should have just gotten rid of that Phoenix Force. Back in the 80s or 70s or whatever.
Oh, like, they did so many things. Like, they massacred, like, the Summers family and, like, all this...
The whole planet of asparagus people.
Please think of the asparagus people.
All right, that's it for Marvel Noise, episode 364. Join us again next time where... I don't know what we'll have. Until Namor and the Phoenix get married and have kids with fire wings on their ankles. Make mine Marvel. Later.
At first flash of Eden, we race down to the sea.
Waiting for the sun. Waiting.